Hello, everybody. Welcome to Blind Bargains Cast number 88. Yes, we've hit 88 miles per hour. We've actually hit number two, part two of this year in assistive technology 2016. Joe and Jamie and Shelley are going to be back in just a second to bring you the top stories of 2016. We had several of us vote on the top stories of the year, including those three, myself, Jeff Bishop, Ricky Enger, and we have now the results, and we will find out soon what is number one. Will it be Microsoft? Will it be VFO? Will it be something else? You're just going to have to stay tuned and listen. Episode 88 is brought to you by HIMS, HIMS Lifestyle Innovation. You can visit them at HIMS-INC.com. Now, without further ado, back to Joe, Shelley, and Jamie with the top stories of 2016.
As we break into the top five, we're starting to get into more stories that everybody pretty much had a feeling about. So there's a little bit more singularity hive mind happening here. JJ was cool enough to lump a lot of these because they're kind of all the same story in a way.
I like
that. There were a lot of caption / alt text things that showed up in 2016, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, or others. There were also other apps that came out that kind of sort of did identification, like iPolly. There certainly seemed to be a lot of them, some of them more useful than others. How does the panel feel, and do you use these in your daily tasks / run into them? Are they helpful? How do we feel about all these things that will now tell us what's in a picture or possibly label a picture?
My favorite story, and if I've told it on Blind Bargains, I promise this will be the last time I will tell it, so I can make sure that I've only done it, well, twice. But on Facebook, because, you know, it will identify objects in photos, appears to be outdoors, grass, people. Well, my wife and I have a massive tomcat, and Facebook identified the cat as a small dog. So a fair mistake to make, in my
opinion. Cat's insulted, I'm sure.
Well, he probably was. I didn't make sure he didn't know that at all. I've not had a reason to use a lot of these apps my wife has cited. So, and we're, you know, not together 24/7, but enough that if I actually did FaceTime her once with a question. I can't remember what that was, but anyway. And then I got the barcode scanner, the Galaxy ID Mate Galaxy. And so for food items and that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm glad these items or these apps, these services are available, and it seems like they're getting better. It seems like I had a friend who signed up for, okay, what was one of the first ones? It slipped my mind.
One of the early ones. iPolly, what was the other one? There was, see, that's the other side of this, right? Is that there's so many things kind of sort of doing this now that it's easy to lose track of them and or use them over a period of time. We're back to what Shelley was talking about with Google Home and the Echo, you know, the stickiness. Is some of the implementation better? Like in the case of Microsoft, the use case of being able to do that with the help of the cloud to be able to identify things in PowerPoints, that's kind of useful and something I could see myself using. The ones in Facebook are helpful, but I find it too kind of weird because I took a picture of our meat and cheese tray at Christmas and I didn't have anybody in the picture, but yet it said that there was somebody sitting at the table. So it was like people sitting at a table. And it really what we figure is that it saw chairs at the table. So, you know, there's some of that I kind of sort of, I trust it, but don't trust it kind of thing. It's like, okay, well, good. That is a picture of something. At least I'm involved in the picture and I'm cool with that. But I don't use it in the same ways that I thought I would. And it's nice. So certainly in Twitter, it's rarely used. I know it's there. And I, unfortunately myself, end up still captioning my own pictures because it's sometimes just faster than it is to go to that other box and then fill in the description. Facebook makes it easier. I will say that on iOS. So that's where I end up doing a lot of that, like alt description in that. If Facebook doesn't recognize what it is automatically. Shelley, do you encounter these things? Do you find yourself using them happily? Were they difficult to kind of discuss in writing?
I'm glad they exist. I don't use them. And partly it's because of the weird way I interact with Twitter and Facebook. I've put myself on a fairly serious Facebook diet over the past few months. And also, I don't have, because the apps have a habit of ballooning on my devices, I actually use Facebook through the web. So I don't get much of the description. And so that's unfortunate. Twitter, yeah, I caption my own pictures too. I've gotten real good at it. And I will, people will tell me if I don't do the alt text, whew, man. And because of the Twitter client I use on the Mac, which is not very friendly to VoiceOver, I can't get access to the what captioning exists. So I'm sort of an edge case in that regard. I'm glad it exists. I got a little cringy when I saw the extent to which Facebook was trying to make a warm, fuzzy story out of it. But on the other hand, it really does, at least to some extent, make it possible or more pleasant for blind folks to participate in Facebook, because Facebook is so photo heavy. And even if it's not 100% accurate, I may not know that Jamie's critter is a tomcat, and I'd like to know it's a tomcat, but at least if I know it's Jamie's pet,
right,
I have some sense of what that animal in that picture means to Jamie. So, you know, it's better than nothing, but it's not ideal.
So the service was Be My Eyes, I'm pretty sure, is the one I'm thinking of. And my sighted friend signed up and never got a call. So it's like there for a while, I think blind people and sighted people weren't getting paired together maybe in some of these apps as easily and quickly as they could have been. And so if that is improving, then that's a great thing. If they're figuring out how to make this stuff work a little better and a little more efficiently, then that's excellent.
I use TapTapC a lot, not so much anymore, but I use it for colors a lot. I'll be in a store and I want to know whether that's a salmon shirt I'm about to buy or a red one or something like that. And so those things are great. I sort of think of that a little differently than I think of the social media stuff, because whether it's Be My Eyes, which is a live service trying to pair people together that got so much publicity when it came out, I think it's about 2 years ago now, or whether it's something that's like TapTapC, or there's a couple of others. I can't remember. But anyway, there are a number of those services. And those feel to me more practical. And like in some way, those services will kind of last and maybe even evolve and grow. You know, the Facebook and Twitter stuff is it feels a little bit less imperative that it be gotten right. But at the same time, you know, if you're going to do it, you should, you know, hopefully Facebook is getting more information as more people use it. I'd be interested to know that too. I'd be interested to know what their algorithms are learning based on people interacting with those images and whether they're gathering information about whether screen reader users are using that. And I know that's controversial and it should be controversial, but still the extent to which Facebook gets some feedback may help them decide how much resource to apply to those features.
Yeah, that actually plays into a lot of thoughts. I didn't touch on Home and Echo with the security issue earlier, you know, that they're the devices that are always listening. Some people have fears and thoughts about that. At the same time, Facebook did some of that alt description so they could have metadata as well for feeds and be able to look at certain things and know what's popular and auto trend. That has good and bad implications as well. Facial recognition. This is another reason why Facebook had facial recognition, then kind of had to drop it out of Germany and some other EU countries because of the privacy concerns. I think this is something that we'll always run into with AI in the future, because definitely that trend isn't stopping amongst any of the companies, your big major AT companies, even your minor AT companies. I mean, there are companies buying AI startups, artificial intelligence startups all the time in order to, you know, automate things or turn them into bots or just to be able to have that metadata. How many people are posting pictures of cats? Well, let's scrape it and see. Bam, look, a zillion people are posting on cats. And out of that, here are calicos, here are black cats, here are... It gets really weird. Big data is a very hard thing to kind of wrap your brain around, and it has some accessibility advantages. But if you kind of think about it, or if you allow yourself to think about it, kind of what Shelley was indicating earlier, there are some privacy concerns and trade-offs. And I think that's going to be in the future for us in these modern days where we rely more and more on big companies providing us access.
Speaking of cats, it is interesting and worth pointing out that identification has not made its way to Instagram. And I say that because as I've been on my little Facebook diet, I find that when I just want to quickly share something, I'll often snap a picture. And more often than not, there's a cat involved. The Cats of Instagram hashtag is one I use. And that's another thing. I think people, hashtag culture helps to some extent, not as much as you'd like, but that's one way I...
Yeah,
that will be something we will have to see in the future as these things tend to shift and people start to find which types of services they prefer or want to be able to do. I'm glad that it had moved to the dating app scene, I guess. You know, I don't know that we need artificial intelligence to give us visual representation of people yet. Are we that materialistic or shallow yet? I'm not sure. We'll find out in 2017. The fourth story happens to be one that all of us have, I guess, at one form or another. Accessible TVs. Wow, where do we want to start? Roku, TiVo, Comcast, of course, who went into this direction. But during the time that we were off, we also saw it on Verizon Fios. And others seem to be entering into this particular fray faster and faster. While we don't always have the ability to get to audio description through most of this programming, depends on what platform you're talking about, the devices that we can access that programming through seem to be growing by leaps and bounds. Shelly, you did a demonstration on the Roku. Has that changed any since your original demo that you did over at your blog?
No, I did a demo of the Roku. I have a Roku television, and so there was some really dreadful speech that I got it to have everybody hear. Interestingly enough, just as an aside, the voice on my Roku television is different than the voice on the dedicated Roku streaming devices. It's pretty much stayed the same, and I wouldn't be surprised. It took them a really long time to roll it out. They announced it, I think, in late October, and I think it was mid-December by the time all of the devices had rolled it out. So it seems like they're being slow about it. And I think it probably did leave a bad taste in people's mouths because there are other environments where they're far ahead with voice. Obviously, Apple TV, Amazon, although obviously no audio description, but the platform is further along, and more TVs coming out that are better than the Roku. And if somebody said to me, well, would you recommend a Roku for a blind friend? I would say, well, it would depend on whether there was a specific channel on the Roku that was not available elsewhere. And the other thing I'll say about this whole TV topic in general is that we can't underestimate the fact that as more people are able to watch with apps, whether on their phones or their mobile devices, not only do we get to watch television on our TVs connected to whatever they're connected to, but we also have the flexibility, just as everyone else does, to use apps, most of which are completely accessible, some of which are partially accessible, but it feels like it's moving in the right direction, and we're not sort of all shunted into one platform. Oh, you're blind, you should get an Apple TV. You actually have choices, and it's interesting that cable companies are providing some of those choices, and the issue with that is, of course, if you're not a Fios customer, or if you are not a Comcast customer, if Time Warner is the only game in town, or in my case, I have two choices if I want to buy cable. I didn't choose Time Warner. I have a small regional company that provides that service. I guess the question is, how long is it going to be before those regional services provide access to their cable systems, or does a blind person, like a lot of other people, just say, you know what, I'm going to cut the cord because the cable system I have is not making its services accessible quickly enough, or they're not accessible at all, or a certain channel that I like is not giving me what I need. I think I can just cut the cord. And all that is to say, it's great that we get to participate in the market and that we have options, mostly, unless you're stuck in an environment where cable is your only game in town, and it's not a company that's been forward-looking as far as providing these accessible tools.
Or you face bandwidth caps in some cases, so that could also play into it.
But that's a case. But that's an issue for everyone. I mean, that doesn't. Sure. That's not specific to us.
No, but it plays into that market philosophy that you were talking about, where you get to make the same decisions as everybody else. Now, was Google Fiber? Are you in a fiber hood? Were you able to consider that there in Austin?
I personally am not. It's kind of weird because I personally am not. My mother is, but she can't use my cable company because her neighborhood, and we both live in the Austin, Texas city limits, her neighborhood is not connected to my cable company. The interesting thing, just as an aside about Google Fiber, because we have that here in Austin, is it has made the other cable services much more competitive. So you can get really fast internet from companies that were not doing that several years ago, even if you're not able to get Google Fiber yourself.
Even the slow AT&T has found a way to magically make speeds faster.
Yeah,
Brian Brushwood and his saga has been very interesting. If you watch Cord Killers or those kinds of shows, Jamie, you were in the Midwest, not as well connected as some might think, I would say, but right. There are certain parts of the Midwest that are enjoying fiber as they are upgrading their municipal systems. Where do you come down on this? You've had an Apple TV in the past. Have you thought or even had a desire, like as your wife, thought about changing into a more updated version of things? And if so, was accessibility something you considered?
It's interesting because I also have a regional cable provider that does not have any accessible options. I could cut the cord almost tomorrow. There are a few things I do occasionally, like local channels. My wife will sometimes do the Christmas marathon of DVR, you know, the Christmas shows off the Hallmark Channel. Although she's more and more using Netflix, and I'm using the ABC and the CBS app. So I'm kind of right on that edge, right on that fence, if you will, of using a lot more apps. I don't use the Apple TV. I still got a third gen Apple TV, and I don't use it the way I thought I would. And I'm kind of facing the dilemma of, part of it is because I can't use a lot of things because I can't connect with my cable company because it's not listed. Or you try to enter an activation code and you try to figure out what VoiceOver is telling you on the Apple TV so you can type it in, and it's hard to make it repeat it, and you can't do a character at a time to spell it out. I can't justify a fourth gen Apple TV because I don't use it very much, but I'm not sure if I got the fourth gen if I would use it more. So it's kind of a vicious circle for me there.
Yeah, I'm kind of floating in between on that. It's funny you should mention, I have an Apple fourth gen, as I've said on the show a couple of times. To give one example, because I could do this all day, HBO Now, I have a 3-month free subscription from my Google Chromecast. The newest video came with one if you bought it during Christmas. The iOS app is a bit of a logistical nightmare, but the Apple TV app is really good. Same with CW. There are a couple of things that just really work for Apple TV, but I would say more than that, Apple TV is great for being able to rent audio described movies. That has become kind of the go-to, where I don't know that I want to buy that film, but I certainly don't mind renting it just to say that I saw it and I didn't feel like going out. And here's the other side of this. Star Wars Rogue One, and this leads me into the second portion of this particular spot on our countdown, took the family to go see Star Wars Rogue One at an IMAX screen here in Charlotte. And the audio descriptive devices in the theater were, you know, there. They worked this time, unlike last year when I went to go see Force Awakens and they were tuned for the theater next door. So right when the big word Star Wars came up, I heard a very big spoiler in the middle of the film next door because they're running at separate times. This year, they were tuned for the right one, and I brought it in. I find myself generally, though, on a movie like that, wanting to hear the score, so I don't use the audio description as much. But Ricky had a good time with it. But at the same time, I kind of wished that they had done what Disney had done for Finding Nemo, which was enabled the ability for you to use your phone, an app, and download it or sync it, you know, live if you have, you know, enough data to the movie in the theater and listen on your own device with your own earbuds, not, you know, the ones that they have at the theater, not like you feel like you have to clean them or worry about them being programmed. It's on you rather than the theater. Now, there are rules that are going into effect and more direct ways in which theaters are going to have to comply with being able to offer captioning and audio descriptioning moving forward. But I kind of like the way of being able to do this through an app. And this gets back to Apple TV in that there are a lot of choices, and I could choose to watch something through Apple TV, or I can use my devices, Android or iOS, and point it at my Chromecasts and do what's AirPlay for Apple TV. You can do that with Chromecast where you throw a video over there just sitting on the couch. Not everybody has these opportunities and availabilities, as we're talking about, of what's available to you. We don't have Google Fiber here yet, although Charlotte is getting Google Fiber, so we're stuck with Time Warner. And Time Warner, too, even though it's a very large company and that it's been purchased now by Charter and is changing over to Spectrum, it has some deals with companies and not with others. And a perfect example is Adult Swim. You can watch that on the Time Warner VOD, but they don't belong to the little enter your code thing or sign in with your cable company for what essentially was a Time Warner company at one point, because they want to be able to track that internally. It's weird when you get into these ecosystems and media, and it really depends, again, on your use case, what you want to do, where you want to be. But the number of opportunities, and I found myself being a curmudgeon as well, when it came down to, Joe, did you play with this Roku yet? Well, I'm not really interested because personally, I have a bunch of stuff all that's already doing all of that. And so these were conversations I had with Shelley offline where I'm glad that's there, but it's not something I would go seeking. And that was a weird thing to say when it came to assistive technology, because before it would have been like Cookie Monster, nom, 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 nom. It's electronic. It speaks. Let's hear it, you know?
Yeah.
But I found myself really kind of dovetailing to a point where there was actually too much in the marketplace to concern myself with or follow or track. That was strange.
But see, here's the weird thing. For people who are, and you, your examples are larded up with, I want to watch this program and this is how I do it and I Chromecast it and I go to this fat. I barely know what channel a show is on. I mean, it's the way I live my life. I don't watch much television, but when I watch television, I would like to be able to turn on my device. I'm happy to do a search. Oh, I've heard about this show. I've heard about this movie.
Yeah.
I'd like to search. You tell me where it is. I'll decide based on what it costs and whether that device is accessible and whether the app is accessible. That's one thing I forgot to mention about the Roku. And the Apple TV has the same issue as well. There are some apps that are not accessible, not although happening. Many are.
Yeah.
But the issue especially is the complexity of television at this point, so that you do have whole podcasts by people talking about the four or five different means they have of watching television. And both from a financial point of view and just a, I want to watch my darn show. I don't want to think about how many ways there are to watch it. It feels like we really are in a transition period. So a couple things happen in transitions. Some services fall away, and hopefully the rising tide lifts all boats, except for the ones that fell away. And then eventually we get an interface that is simple and straightforward. And we don't have that right now. And it was funny because I had this Roku demo, and I went and I asked a couple people on Twitter what apps they wanted me to test with, and I tested with them, and I tested with apps that were personally of interest to me. And then a couple of days ago, the reason I got a Roku in the first place is because I wanted to subscribe to the Warner Archive service. That's not available on the other devices. It is available in apps. I could use it. I could use iOS. I could AirPlay it to the Apple TV. But as far as a native app, Roku is where it's at. And so I had not subscribed to it, but there was a really good deal recently, and I was getting ready to punch the button on the free trial. And I said, let's find out whether it's accessible. And I pulled it up on the Roku, and I found that it was, and I tweeted that out. And I got a lot of retweets on that, because people are finding that they don't necessarily want to commit to a particular technology unless they know that a certain app or a certain class of apps is going to be accessible to them. And so there's just so much transition going on, both in terms of the mainstream, us being able to figure out how we want to watch what we want to watch without a lot of friction. And then on the accessibility side, not being sure that if we make one choice or even two choices, that we're going to be able to find and watch everything we want in the most accessible way possible. We have a long way to go.
And Shelley laid a masterclass on me this particular conversation in a much different frame when it came to the TV app for iOS/TVOS. And she kind of re-altered my perception on what that does and how that works and who it is for. Naturally, when I pulled my own individual use case from my nether regions and put my head back on straight, in that the TV app does essentially what Shelley is talking about. If you're in the Apple ecoverse and you're not sure that the Flash is on the CW or the like, it does a lot to, and sure, yeah, like I've called it before, it's a big overlay. but it's a very smart overlay. And for the companies that are doing single sign-on or sharing apps with Apple, that information is there and very helpful. Where it breaks down, though, is if you're in a multi-device universe, if you use not just Apple devices. So if you go to watch Hulu on Android, or you go to watch Hulu on your television, which may be another, you know, maybe Linux, who knows? Apple doesn't know about it, and Hulu isn't sharing that data with Apple. It's only sharing the stuff that it sees through Apple devices. So if you're watching, say, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode 5, but you watch episode 6 somewhere else, then you kind of hurt yourself because it thinks you want to watch episode 6 next. And so you need to know what service it is. And it's very good about telling you that. Or if I watch episode 6 on my iPad, but I want to throw it to my Apple TV, that's easily done, right? But if I want to throw it to my Chromecast, I'll have to launch the app. Then inside the app, I'll need to tell it to go to my Chromecast. If you're a cord cutter and you're going to use Chromecast because they're cheap, and you can put them all over the house, that's something you could do. Again, it's doable. It's just the complexity that you were talking about, Shelley, earlier, learning that technology, learning those phrases and terms like Chromecast targets or even AirPlay is something that's very interesting. And for some people, they might just be, whatever, I don't want to go through half of that stuff that you guys have just been talking about for the last 15 minutes. Then you could just always go to iTunes or Google Play and just buy it and watch it there, which is something I find myself doing a lot, is just staying within Netflix or staying through Amazon Prime. The Expanse just came to Prime, so I'm rewatching The Expanse before season 2. And it's a very interesting time. I agree with you. Jamie, we've left you out of the conversation just briefly. Any thoughts before we move to our next one in the countdown?
Just that what Shelley was talking about the simplicity of just, so I want to watch my show. That's really kind of where living with someone else, my wife who is sighted, she doesn't want to mess with stuff. She wants to be able to use the TV guide and on the cable box and just, you know, on the few occasions when she does watch TV, just find what she wants to watch. And I would kind of like that too. I'm like Shelley, and I hadn't really thought of it and put it, I hadn't distilled it into quite the way that she put it. But yeah, I would just like to be able to search for Designated Survivor and find out what time it comes on and what night. And unfortunately, it's not audio described, but if it was, that would be great too.
Yeah, and some of it, I think the assumption is that people who feel that way are what we used to call flashing 12s, people who didn't know how to operate the VCR. But for me, look, I live every single day of my life in tech. I can tell you what's in all my iPhone folders. I can tell you what version my operating system is on my computer. I don't have an issue with technology. But for me, all television is about is occasionally turning it on to acquire a little bit of entertainment for my eyeballs. I don't want to have a plan to watch television.
And a schematic.
Even though I have the capability to do it.
the schematic. You know, you can take the guy out of selling home theater, but you can't take the home theater out of the guy who used to sell home theater. What can I say? It's just one of those interesting times. I think it's really interesting, and you get to find out just, you know, how media savvy some people are. There is a lot out there for people to watch or grab, and we didn't even touch on, say, Sling or AT&T with its DirecTV Play and the accessibility of that up or down. So in 2017, that's not going to stop. There's going to be a lot more interesting things, especially if net neutrality falls away. It's going to be a very interesting time. We will have to see. And of course, that doesn't even get into the FCC rules, which were kind of delayed for some of the things with set-top boxes and the like. And we'll see where that plays out in 2017 as well. Now, the number 3 story we kind of touched on a little bit here, so I'm going to expand this out. The Orbit Reader was a big thing for APH, but good grief, it certainly wasn't the only thing they had going. The full Braille tablet kind of thing that they've got going on, Nearby Explorer, was huge. Certainly for those of us who were using it on Android was one thing. For it to come to iOS, that sparked a really good debate on people who were using other things like Blind Square or what have you. And it was a very interesting time because growing up, this APH is where I turned to for my talking watches, for scales, for Braille, for whatever it was. In the 70s, the 80s, that catalog was a magical transportive situation where I could get lost for hours under a CCTV going, ooh, I don't know that I need large print Braille bingo cards, but it'd be nice to have. The company seems to be on an upward trend in getting back into mindshare of the community and doing it in a very big way. How do we feel about some of the amazing moves that came out of the little company in Kentucky?
I love going to convention and going to the APH booth because the sales rep can talk for 20 minutes with almost no breath and not mention the same product twice. And they just have this huge variety of products that they offer, and they're all really great. I mean, when I was at ATIA, I played with the interactive map that uses, it has the raised tactile states, that sort of thing. But then you use the pen to press and hear, I think it's 17 layers of information about that state. And it's like, I want one of those. It's a little more than I was willing to pay that day. But, and I don't have a reason for having one other than I would play with it for a while. But it's things like that that they manage to produce both just really well. That's not trivial at all. It's for students. It would be phenomenal. Just their breadth of product categories. I mean, who, you know, if you've ever used Money Talks, the finance management program, I'm still using it. I forget what year that came out, but I was a beta tester, and I still haven't found anything to replace it. And it still works in Windows 10. I think that was probably a Windows, oh man.
Oh, 95, 98?
I was going to say that. I was going to say 95. Yeah. And that still works great. And
that it didn't prompt you to run in compatibility mode is also something that's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Definitely. And winner of Golden Apple Award this year for 2016, it seems, as well.
Yeah.
I do think we have to talk about the Orbit Reader, and everybody was so excited about it, and they have, the ship date has unfortunately continually moved out. And I don't want to be one of those pundits who says, you promised we would have it on this date and we don't have it on this day. But I will tell you that based on my talking with so many people who are eagerly awaiting it, there is a lot of pent-up demand. And I really hope that when it ships, it's just rock solid, because I have a feeling that they're going to be swamped with orders, and that I hope that this delay hasn't soured people on them. I mean, I think a lot of people do have those positive associations with APH and would like to continue that. And something as exciting as the Orbit Reader absolutely will be life-changing for a lot of people who have probably never had a Braille display in any regard. And, you know, APH, my understanding is they've have new leadership this year. They have a new president as of at least about CSUN time. And I don't know to what extent the products that they're coming out with are affected by that, or whether those were already in development. I know Nearby Explorer was. They've been wanting to do that on the iOS platform for a couple of years. And that's another product I had the pleasure of reviewing for Access World, and got a chance to talk to the developers over there and said, yeah, well we had some hurdles and we had to get through them, but we're really glad it's out, and apparently it's well received. There are certainly other products in the market, and I don't think it's the issue of whether there's a place for Nearby Explorer. I think it gives us choices. I think you can use Seeing Eye GPS, you can use Nearby Explorer, you can use Blind Square. The fact that you have choices, as long as the companies are still able to produce those products and get enough market share to do so, then I think choice and the fact that not everybody uses the same thing is probably good. So, and you're right, APH is always one of the most fun booths to go to. There's a lot of energy. There are a lot of people there. There are a lot of products that are little and big. I think you can't underestimate that, especially in a trade show. You can spend $10 or you can spend several hundred dollars at APH, and they're happy to take your money, and they continue to be a company that has a long legacy in our community, but that is continuing to do new and awesome stuff. And I really can't wait for the Orbit Reader to come out and for everybody to be able to get their hands on it.
It was really cool, though, to see them as one of the developers that was highlighted in Golden Apples, because you could say that other than Timecrest, there was some staleness in Apple iOS this year and apps. We have a tendency in the community to find our favorites and stick with them, good or bad. Or, you know, I used JAWS 3.5 back in the day and this isn't fixed, so I'll never touch it again, blah, blah, blah. You know, we have a tendency to fall into those cracks and ruts and never get out. So for APH, which is a company, as I said, as the preamble, was a company that I looked very forward to playing around with or seeing at convention or talking to Larry or seeing what was up. It was a real thrill to see them coming back around and really reaching out on social media and redefining the brand. And, you know, it's just one of those comfort things, one of those bits where you're like, oh yeah, cool. It kind of like we were talking about with some with Keysoft earlier. It's nice to see something that we considered an old friend come back into things, but be different about it. It's not just living on nostalgia. It actually is bringing something new to the table. And I highly recommend Nearby Explorer. Again, using it for Android for quite a while, so it was nice as I moved into using an iPhone for my daily driver for part of this year. It was nice to be able to have that around to be able to use, because it gave some familiarity when jumping back and forth from operating system to operating system. The number two story, just about everybody had this down, the return of Microsoft back to what, you know, some would have categorized before. I made that joke about Jaws 3.5 a minute ago. Well, some people were very adamant about moving to the Mac because they found some issues with Microsoft or Microsoft accessibility or the way other programs worked within the Microsoft operating system, or maybe they had an issue with Jaws, or maybe they didn't like Microsoft Edge and Windows 10 or any number of things. But Microsoft really turned it around. As I said earlier in the show, they were one of these companies that was out to man up for accessibility and add more people and more diverse people amongst the teams over at the Redmont campus and beyond. And with that, it kind of started for me, at least in 2015, with the Xbox having Narrator on it. And then, of course, more and more is being added to Narrator within Windows 10 itself. And right before the Christmas break, we got the word that Braille support was coming to Narrator, and you're going to be able to, in the creator's update coming out either March or April, depending on which source you read, have the ability to install Windows with screen reader support out of the box, which is one of those features that people lay down at my feet as being a make or break feature for them. But I would still say it's statistically, it is not used or as done as often as people would like to say that they do it for. But for those in VMs, yes, that's a big thing. And I actually had some people, including people like Mr. Bishop, say that this is kind of a swing thing for him. This is a big thing that he could see himself actually living within the Windows ecosystem, especially in some of the IT work that he does, and not relying on Macs and VMs as much, with Windows being able to talk through install from the get-go. It seems like Microsoft, as we saw with the Surface Studio and their commitment to accessibility, as Jennifer LaFleury outlined in the roadmap in December, is back and back with a vengeance, and might I say, providing news in December and rocketing up the charts like no one has ever done. And part of the reason why this show was a little delayed, I have to admit.
Yeah, I'm loving what I'm seeing coming out of Microsoft. One of my goals for 2017 is to immerse myself in Narrator. I have really, to be perfectly honest, I haven't used it in a long time, especially since Windows 10. And I just haven't really had time or a reason to, but I am very curious as to what the experience is like now and just the opportunity to learn a new screen reader. Cause you know, who doesn't like to just, you know, pull your hair out because you don't know commands and things that you used to do every day. All of a sudden you can't anymore. Yes. Some people like to do that to themselves on purpose, and I'm one of them.
Just as there's some people that like to play with all the TV devices, there's some people that like to play with all the screen readers.
Absolutely. Dead on. You
and they listen
it
to
right
this show,
there.
And we love you for it. All of you. That is actually yes. Absolute. And touch. Windows Touch is a little different than other touch screen operating systems, and it has improved drastically. That is one of the things that I most enjoy of Surface Pro 2 here in the house, and that has been a very good little unit. May actually end up being my daily driver for 2017. And I have been, I'll hook a larger monitor on it with DisplayPort because I have a dock, but it is really a fascinating thing to see it kind of grow from where it started during the early Windows 10 Insider builds, before Windows 10 was even released. One of our, and you'll see this in the top 10 shows that listeners listen to, Microsoft traditionally, as much as people could say positive or negative things about it, but traditionally for this particular program and others that all three of us have done together, scores extremely high, though, with our listenership. People are genuinely curious about it. Shelley, you recently had Jeff Bishop and myself on the Parallel, and we talked a lot about the Microsoft reformation / new Voltron approach of how it is doing things. What do you think? I mean, we've talked about this on other programs, but that roadmap certainly did lay out a lot of things to look forward to.
Well, first, thanks for making it so that I didn't have to do my own log rolling. Yeah, Jeff and Joe and I talked about Microsoft and Apple. I know, right? For about an hour and a half, we talked about Microsoft and Apple and the kind of years they had. And I think that what's extraordinary to me is the roadmap that Microsoft put out and the degree to which they're reaching out and embracing the community. And I wish Jeff were here because he could talk about the ways that it's going beyond something that's on the web. People like Jeff are being invited to Redmond, and not only are they being told cool, awesome stuff, they're allowed to tell others about it. And that level of transparency is really important for Microsoft. Even if you look at a comparison of Microsoft to Apple, and you may still say, well, the Mac is ahead in some environments, in some ways, and Microsoft is ahead in other ways. More important than looking at that comparison chart is where Microsoft is going as far as openness. And I hope that number one plays out in terms of the products that are released and that they're able to stick to their roadmap. And number two, that gives a nudge to particularly Apple, but certainly Google and Amazon and all the other companies out there that are having to contend with a population of accessibility users who are going and saying, hey, why can't you talk to us like Microsoft does? Why don't you give us more opportunity to have input? And again, it's one of those market-based things where Microsoft is currently providing leadership, and they're also giving people like Jeff, who's in a position to recommend hardware and software to organizations, more of a basis for saying, you know what, Microsoft is not only a platform that everybody can use now, but it's a platform that is continuing to evolve and that people are going to be able to gain from as accessibility gets its tentacles into more stuff that Microsoft makes.
It is a real thrill to walk into stores in a mall like the Apple Store or the Microsoft Store and have, you know, the forward standing in the front door employees be able to talk a little bit about accessibility, that it's worked into training on that level, that it is an awareness that we hadn't necessarily seen or run into before. That is still, I guess, a novelty, or at least new, that I haven't lost the novelty feeling about that when working or talking to these companies. You know, to have a conversation in 2015 with the guys in the Xbox section at the Microsoft Store and them tell me about Narrator, and they brought it up and we're talking back and forth, and that's what got me to buy an on-air antenna to test One Guide with Xbox, to have a talking TV guide of sorts, which has improved and, in fact, has been very much a thing that Microsoft has asked people to provide information about, not just Xbox Narrator, but a lot of their products, either Office through Office Insiders, and really offered a lot of that peek in. If you want to be on the bleeding edge, the fast ring of Microsoft, and you have the time and the ability to troubleshoot that, you can. You can get right in there, roll up your sleeves, and then pass that information along, and not just through feedback or through the forums, but at events. Microsoft was seen at a lot of events this year, and not just the traditional booths that you would see at ATIA, where it'd be, hi, here's your keychain, thanks for coming by, yeah, Access, we believe in it, moving on. You know, they are engaged and are asking questions and holding user groups and speaking to all levels of users, be it at NFB, ACB, or other organizations, or having a very big move in how they feel like Access could go, but are very interested in hearing things. And I think trust is something that they had to earn back or rebuild with the community, and they've been slowly doing that with various individuals on the team. And you know, we talked about this during the event in October with Jeff when he was on the program. It was weird to listen to a video, not know that it was coming at the Microsoft event, and I would hear Narrator at the beginning of this, and then people who I know who are helping make Narrator better at the beginning of a Microsoft event, and, you know, no clue that was going to happen. And it certainly set the tone for that particular event of how they approached it, what they were doing. And Apple is still a little clandestine in what they do. Now, that's not to say that they're, you know, completely buttoned up, but, you know, it is just the nature of Apple to do things the way that Apple does them. And some people find that aloof or hard to scale, even though it really isn't. You can call the accessibility hotline. You can leave information with Apple as well. And they do come to events. But it was Microsoft's ball to have to move across the goalposts this year. And I think they really did it. And I don't think that's going to stop. I think that's a form of momentum that we're seeing from the top down through Satya Nadella. And if it starts a cold war amongst the big companies, I'm all for it. I am absolutely happy to have Google and Microsoft and Apple, you know, fight it out with Amazon on who's going to be the most accessible. That is, you know, for us, for those with, you know, physical or cognitive or who are deaf, fantastic. That is amazing, especially in, you know, some of the changing landscape. So we benefit, as Shelley has said so many times on this program today, that choice is our friend here. And if not, then we can move from one platform to another, because it's definitely something that we have to consider when looking into education and other markets. This year was really the year of the individual use case, but it was also the year of looking at specific segments of the market, and that could find you jumping platforms depending on the accessibility needed. Jamie, any thoughts?
Just agree with what you just said about the how much fun it will be to watch an Apple event and then watch a Google event and watch a Microsoft event and just say, hey, wow, all three of these companies talked about, or an Amazon, all these companies talked about accessibility, or two of them did, two of them didn't. And I'm not one of those people that gets all bent out of shape if accessibility isn't specifically mentioned at especially an Apple event, because I know it's about the shiny new stuff. And sometimes maybe it's a little harder to wrap your head around, you know, voiceover. But at the same time, the fact that a company can find ways to do it is just that much more impressive to me, that they actually take the time to go ahead and do that.
We'll be back with more of the top stories of 2016 after this message from Hims.
Go make it happen with GoVision, the new transportable video magnifier from Hims. With GoVision, you get all you'd expect from a transportable read, write, and distance magnifier with optical character recognition, plus the ability to enlarge and customize files, photos, and videos from your cell phone, tablet, or computer. Look at a slideshow of pictures from your vacation right from your thumb drive. Bring the world into focus with GoVision. For more information, call us at 888-520-4467. Visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com and follow us on social media. Hims, lifestyle innovation.
The number one story certainly doesn't necessarily mean that it was one that we were avoiding. It was one on everybody's list. In fact, Microsoft and this next story were on everybody's list in one of the only two stories. So quite like those who follow sports in which the two college teams in the playoffs play once again, it was destined, if you will, that these two were to meet each other on the 1 and 2 spot. Now, to build something to take on giants in the playground of accessibility, you will have to probably create or form a giant yourself. And that's certainly something that we saw happen a little bit in 2015, but ooh, baby, did it happen in 2016, as we have the rise of VFO, Vector Freedom Optilec, and those letters could have grown by a couple of others if they wanted to stick them on the back there with A and I and G and W. So there was a lot of letters that could be actually put on there, half the alphabet, if you will. Before I go too much further, full disclosure, I am contracted to AI Squared, so I will limit my comments to a lot of this and rely very heavily on my co-hosts here to provide commentary, because there's only so much that I can describe through NDA, especially when it comes to things that are happening in 2017. I might get uncomfortably quiet would be the term I would use. With that said, early in 2016, people were still feeling kind of the throes of mixing the chocolate and the peanut butter together in the fact that Freedom Scientific and Optilec had merged, taking one of the largest names in low vision CCTV land and hardware and putting it with one of the more dominant names in assistive technology blindness software here in the United States with Freedom Scientific, and who also is no slouch when it comes to video magnification themselves. And then in the middle of the year, right before the summer conventions, everybody was dealt a second wave when AI Squared was acquired by Vector and added to the throng. And shortly after, of course, AI Squared grabbed GW Micro in order to try and be a better competitor to Freedom Scientific. So what goes around comes around in the great big cycle of assistive technology. We've had mom and pops to big nationals, back to mom and pops, and now we're back into multi-companies. And with that said, the formation of VFO and its acquirements was the number one story of 2016, guys.
I'm laughing because I've been a beta tester for WindowWise for quite a while, so we could just let Shelley vamp on this for like 15 minutes if we wanted to. Just let her.
Oh, my.
No.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Where's JJ and his unbridled enthusiasm when I need him, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
Feeling under the weather. I think it's really interesting. I'll start the ball rolling. How's that? Okay. I think it's important for people to realize that there was a little bit of contraction happening in this industry. And behind the scenes, a lot of the major players, HIMSS and HumanWare and others, have all seen some form of ownership change or investment change in the background. So as a whole, this is just a bigger story of what's been happening to the smaller companies. And so the industry has been in a bit of a contraction for a while. It's just that I think a lot of people thought it was going to be a two-horse race for a bit and didn't necessarily see how all this worked out. It's certainly interesting to think that some of the biggest minds and biggest names are now working under the same banner, as I said a couple of months ago, to know that Doug and Eric are on the same team. Actually, as someone who's a geek about this kind of stuff, is kind of interesting to see what they'll come up with. It's kind of fascinating, if you will. The Bill Gates picture in behind Steve Jobs, you know, for those who are big AT fans and follow mainstream events, that's kind of the thing we're looking at here. But it really does take a bigger company to respond, be nimble, and be mobile when you think of all the others on this countdown, being that if Microsoft, if Amazon, if Google, if Apple, if all these guys and others that we haven't even touched on here, Facebook, are coming into this and coming into this huge, well, then you got to have a war chest to be able to match them.
There's a lot of collective talent there, that's for sure, between all of the companies. One interesting question is, does this put a screen reader like NVDA in a better position, a worse position, or is it in a league all of its own?
I feel like there's several pieces to this. First of all, that people are unnerved by change, especially people who have learned to use a specific product, whether you're a Zoom Text user or a JAWS user or a Magic user or any of those products. That particular product that you have chosen or has been chosen for you at some point in the past is probably very central to the way you do things. We were joking earlier about being a geek about screen readers, and certainly there are people like that, but there are a lot of people that never get out of JAWS.
True.
And it's not incumbent upon the world to preserve that status quo. However, once change occurs, if products are discontinued or products are combined with one another, there will be learning curves, there will be angst, there will be training that will have to happen. People will have to become accustomed either to changed or new environments. And for people in the accessibility community, especially older folks or people who've been trained a long time ago, that's really an on-the-ground challenge. And so I want to respect and honor the people in those communities who feel like this change might be bad for them because they feel like either the product that they love is at risk or the tech support for the product that they love might change because people are fired, people lose their jobs because these companies combine. And that will absolutely happen and already has happened. And so then we move from the strictly consumer side to the business side of it. And there are a lot of people, you can talk about those companies combining talents, and hopefully the venture capitalists who started this whole thing will be smart about what talent talent they keep. Just because really talented people are at the head of these organizations doesn't mean that they will either choose to stay or that they'll have that option. And so we may not have as much of an embarrassment of riches as we would like to, but I hope that the overlords, so to speak, are smart and are hands off to the extent that the people in the AT community probably know a lot more about not only the business, but the technical side of what they do than the people who purchase the company. Another thing is obviously going to be pricing. If products are combined or discontinued or changed, it becomes a more monopolistic environment, and the opportunity for reducing prices for AT equipment and software is lessened. But the other side of that coin is that because mainstream companies like Apple and Microsoft and Google are providing more built-in accessibility, the AT companies may still, especially on the software side, well, on the hardware side too, with iPhones and other mainstream devices that have accessibility features, will have been facing more pressure in any case. So I just bring that up not to have a defined opinion about it, because I think, you know, economics and marketing and pricing are hard, and it's unknowable at this point whether the contraction in the number of companies is going to cause prices to rise, or whether the fact that this kind of technology has become more commodified by what the mainstream is doing will cause prices to decrease. And I don't think my gut doesn't feel good about it. That's not scientific, and it doesn't really have to do with all the things I've been saying up to now. My gut doesn't like the idea of losing choice. My gut doesn't like the idea of people who have experience in this industry losing the ability to work in this industry. But I'm not 100%, well, I don't have the option of being against it because it's a fact. But I guess what I wonder is how this kind of a merger is going to affect the opportunity to innovate. Because if that contraction is already happening, as Joe says, innovation is going to be one of the first casualties of that contraction. And now you have companies that are combined, which in theory have more resources, but less pressure to innovate, at least from competitors within the AT industry, although the pressure to innovate will certainly come from Apple and Microsoft and Google. So I think there are a lot of unknowns, and it's very interesting. And it has to be very interesting for the other companies that remain independent of this merged behemoth that we now have, the Hymses and the Humanwares. So I don't know, I guess it's my... But it's complicated, and I think it's irresponsible for anybody to have unbridled enthusiasm or to be just dour and grumpy about it. I think there's too much going on for us to understand how it's going to end up.
Well, your gut feeling and my gut feeling are the same, whatever that's worth. My gut says it's probably not the best thing for consumers. But it could be an interesting time if Narrator really does develop, if Apple continues to work on its products and other things might come along. In NVDA, users are very loyal to that product, and a lot of people put a lot of effort, a lot of time into that product. So it could actually be a good thing for those other products.
And you might have people supporting NVDA, not political exactly, but you might have people believing that supporting a screen reader that is built based on the support that they get from the community is just a way that they want to go, and that's how they want to express their opinions in a world of corporate combination.
It happened at a good time, is where I was going, was that all of this happened at the dawning of a new operating system. Had this happened prior to Windows 10, I'd feel a little bit more doom and gloom, right? Because then it gets into so-and-so doesn't get their upgrade to Windows 10, and that's how they get voted off the island, no matter who they are or where they are. Certainly that has something to do with it. It gives Dolphin the ability to be a good player and a counterpoint to VFO, right? Because Dolphin is very big outside the United States, as we've said on the program before, and offers a kind of all-in-one solution and a different take on that as it stands. So their philosophy will be interesting and certainly a good place for us to do compare and contrast. It remains to be seen how things work with Microsoft as a built-in rather than a bolt-on. If you are a dual user, if you are someone who uses screen magnification and screen reading, this is going to impact you hugely because you'll be looking at how VoiceOver and Zoom work together. You'll be looking at how magnification and Narrator work together. And then you'll be looking at the more over-the-counter purchases to see if that works for you. Maybe this means that somebody else will come through the ranks and do something completely different. You know, there's iCyst in Canada and some others in screen magnification that are out there. As far as NVDA goes, if you like it and you use it, donate. You've heard us say this on the show. You heard JJ and I say this. You've heard Patrick say this. Donate. If you believe in NVDA, you believe in the cause. It's not enough to upgrade and skip the I won't donate now button. You know, it's the whole idea to rally around them, because there will be a lot of resources available to many of these companies to iterate or be able to work with the latest version of this, that, or the other thing. And it'll be very much the beta community and those who have been big fans of NVDA to work a little extra harder. And I hate to say that, to make sure that the out of the box experience for whatever new product, be it Office 2023, what have you, works, or Edge, or that. I think it's debatable on Edge, but just like Firefox used to be the browser that people would turn to for accessibility, you know, to get out of Internet Explorer issues, Chrome seems to be that way too. So there's going to be a big scramble to see who works better with Chrome. And don't forget that we have, you know, Chrome and Chrome Box itself in the education space, because there is a big place for Chromebooks in education, and we barely even touched on that when it comes to Google and accessibility. And Chromebox Next is rumored to come out in January, which is the next update and iteration to the Chromebox screen reader. Not to throw one more coal onto the fire, the timing though for you to sit back and put your feet up and let these guys go at it again is perfect, because Windows 10 is out. It's maturing. Microsoft has said, either through literature or through marketing, that this is the last copy of Windows ever, whatever that means. What I can say is that we've had a couple updates to Windows 10, and nothing has directly impacted the way that screen readers and screen magnifiers have to update themselves. So it's not like a new version of Windows where you have to worry about compatibility. Mostly everybody is compatible. Most of your big names, even some of your smaller ones, Duxbury and the like, are working. So that's kind of a given. We have a stable platform, a stable version of Windows, which when we've had these issues before, when we've had contraction, when Freedom Scientific itself was formed, we were in the middle of Windows 98 and transition time, and then Windows 98 SE, which also required things to be changed with DCM. So we've been in this position before, but not necessarily in a position where we had to sit back and let them duke it out. Now we can, and I think that's something that's a little different, but I stress that nobody's going away tomorrow. Nobody's disappearing tomorrow. I think a lot of this is kind of shaking itself out. What it really does come down to is, like I had said before on the show, snow crash. You know, everybody's getting behind their walled gates. They live in their little villas, and sometimes they'll interact and sometimes they won't. It'll just depend on what you want to do. Individual use case. Will this impact your job? Do you have thousands of dollars of customized scripts at your work? You know, that plays a lot into it. So a built-in solution like Narrator might not do as well as all the thousands of dollars of JavaScripts that have been done. It remains to be seen. It is going to be some people who are familiar. Do you want to learn a new screen reader? That's what happens to a lot of people when they decide that they want to get a Mac and they want to get off of Windows and jump over to VoiceOver. So that still will exist, but it's up to the individual and how their mental neural elasticity works in a new world. Because we're all bilingual when it comes to screen readers, either on our phones or, as we were talking about in our cord cutting conversations, we're all learning new screen readers all the time. So it's not just one ring rules them all anymore.
That's a good point. And you know, it really is a time to, if you have an option that really works for you, to support that, you know, send feedback to the developer, donate, whatever you need to do, because, you know, if you care about a certain product, I mean, I realize there may be some things that can't be changed because we don't know how things are going to shake out in the next months to come, but there are probably some things that we can take some control over and help shape the direction of.
It never hurts to be vocal. And even if you're whatever screen reader you're on or whatever big piece of technology, ends up dominating your life. And we have to keep in mind that a lot of times people didn't choose those. They were chosen by an employment situation or an educational situation where maybe they got a discounted or a funded copy of something. And then some people are more likely to accept the opportunity to change and to move over to an NVDA, whereas others will continue to use what they have used for a long time. And being able to do that for them is a kind of freedom, although you obviously there are going to be some cases in which that doesn't remain viable. But I think it's worth remembering that the level of use, the level of skill, and the level of interest in changing and moving forward varies a lot in our community, that the level of training that people have received, and then also finally the flexibility that people have based on decisions that are made by employers and educational institutions as they move through employment and education and need to be skilled in whatever the products that those entities require or provide. So it's a thicket, and I think it will continue to be. And then finally, I guess the last little thing I would say is there's a potential issue for hardware products that reach end of life because of mergers. And if somebody has bought one recently that they intend to keep for a long time and have had support options provided for them, I think it's right for people to be concerned and to keep up with what's going on and be aware of what options they have for moving forward in case the hardware product that they use is no longer compatible with the other things that they use, or in case the company that supports it is no longer able to provide that support.
And then that rolls back into the beginning of the show. Does a $500 Braille display meet your needs in the operating system you use? Or do you want something that's wireless with Bluetooth? Or there's so many things to consider now than before. And that's a good thing, as crazy as that sounds. The ability to have those options and to make those choices has been filtered down some. So it's not as much as, say, 10 years ago. And for that, that's kind of good. Some would say that's a negative. But, you know, from a support standpoint, though, it's also a good thing. You know, when people start to look at Windows 7 coming to end of life in 2020, maybe that's when you make your decision. Because you might be living in a Windows 7 2000 Office 2010 universe and be very happy there. You've got 3 years to kind of wait and figure that out and decide where you want to go or see how this all shakes out. And you have more opportunities to play with it for free than ever before, whether that be going to Best Buy and hitting Command F5 and playing with VoiceOver or Windows Enter at the current recording to bring up Narrator or in a Microsoft store or to get a demo of a particular software and play around with it, or to get NVDA for free, or, you know, WindowEyes for Office, which is still going on. You have all those abilities to get to things and make your own decisions yourself, and then turn to the community for some of those resources and then make a informed opinion, an informed judgment value based off of your needs, because only you know what you want. And that's really what it's going to come down to. You might grab this Braille display and say, this is great for what I want, or to take it out into the field, but I really miss routing keys, or I really wish I had USB or C, or I really wish I had, Bluetooth 5. You know, maybe there'll be a Braille display with the 5 spec and it'll move much faster, or I can have multiple devices. And that's not even getting into some of the stuff that Scott talked about earlier this year with hearing aids. So it's a great big wide market and world. And it will be very interesting to see how we navigate in 2017. I'll turn to the panel in a second for their 2017 predictions, as is our normal way of doing things. What isn't normal is I usually go through some of the stories that didn't make it to the top 10 before we go to number one. But number one was kind of anticlimactic, so I kind of just rolled right into it, if you know what I mean. So some of the stories that did make it but were voted by various members of the panel, the update to the $20 bill. That story was on our list. Some of the things that are changing as far as currency is concerned. Baum debuts the new Braille display. What is that called? The 340. And that's the one that I talk about with the USB-C. And Uber settles with the NFB. That still has some things to kind of roll through. And that's not even getting to Shelley's fun in Austin with all the ride-sharing apps. But Uber and Lyft probably will be a big story in 2017 moving forward, especially as Uber gets more into community pools and buses. And of course, with some of the stuff that's going on in Boston with Metro Transit is fascinating, as some of the thoughts that we had in the past about cities subsidizing with ride sharing apps instead of using paratransit are starting to happen. So that's a big one to continue to watch. One that I put down here, and we didn't really touch on, but I kind of hinted on it, the staleness of apps in iOS. This has shown up on the Apple Vis forums a couple of times, and I've seen it on audiogames.net. Something else, maker of the Papa Sangree series and Audio Defense and the Nightjar, them shutting down and turning things over open source. Kind of sad, because that was a company that had a lot of mainstream publicity, had well-known actors like Doctor Strange himself, Benedict Cumberbatch, in their games. They were featured in Ars Technica years ago. There was a lot surrounding something else, and they had a lot of sales. But for them to go under commercially is kind of something about audio games. Can they only go so far? Does immersive audio have to work into virtual reality in the future and video games, in that there are visuals for those who want them, but can it still be played on an immersive level from an audio standpoint? Can we merge gaming in so that an audio-only game, or at least can be played by audio only, can survive in a mainstream market? Because it certainly seems like that as a genre can't exist completely on its own. And that was one of those, like Flexi releasing its stuff to open source as well, which is also kind of an interesting trend between open source and Android this year. There were a lot of little minor stories that were in the background. We talked about the APH display, the big one, that was listed by some of us on the panel. And Talking Typing Tutor coming to iOS, that also plays into our earlier story of APH and how it fits in on the countdown. The Marrakesh Treaty is now reality for some. Some people have placed that on their list. We talked a little bit about Bookshare and the Marrakesh Treaty and books. That's a whole sticky wicket of another kind. And Google promotes accessibility with new features for Chrome OS, TalkBack, and the like. That we've touched on a little bit. The ADA trolls in the 60 Minutes controversy. We've mentioned that prior to going on Christmas break. Lainey Feingold is a person to follow if you're into a lot of that. She breaks it down. The short version of that is Anderson Cooper did a story about ADA, and Lainey was a part of that. She talks a lot about working with Anderson, and then what the actual piece came out was not exactly what people thought it was going to be, and it was actually a very interesting take on what the ADA situation is and trolls. That story is ever changing too. So I'll put a link to Lainey Feingold's Twitter feed and some of the stuff that she's had here in the show notes. So if you're interested in knowing more about that, we'll have to get our legal experts on to talk about that more in general, but not here at the moment. Blind man chosen as the first person to play with the Google car. Yeah. So that one, I'm going to say, and we'll probably get into this, and JJ will probably beat me when he comes back, I have some issues with. What I will say is that there are 5 levels of autonomy, and knowing what is an autonomous car, what is a self-driving car, what is a driving assisted car, is something that you might want to learn if you really are looking forward to this in the far-flung future, because it's not going to happen soon. Also, this story came out about the time that Google was spinning off the self-driving car guys into Waymo. And so it felt more like an investor play to me. And how else can you demonstrate that this is a viable concept and you should invest in it, especially since we're spinning off the company, but to put a blind person in a car in Texas and have them ride around in it. Anyway, that's a long conversation, a long discussion for another time. But some of us on the panel thought it was very big in 2016. RS Games shuts the box and goes on to computer and kind of moves over to the iOS model. That kind of plays into the audio games conversation I was having a moment ago. The City Lights app, again, alternative indoor-outdoor navigation. Microsoft's doing a lot of that. Also, some of the stuff we've talked about in Boston. There's a lot of ways of being able to recognize what's going on in the street, alternative navigation. There was a story, in fact, this morning about vibrating pants in CES, and that it was helping with indoor navigation. It's kind of a take, Jamie, on the old indoor vibrating shoes concept we talked about for years and years and years on another show. And your captions could be gone, which is a big thing for some people. The accessible apps captcha be gone was voted as being a big story in 2016. And then the Braille to go. That's an interesting story all to its own, in that if you look at our CSUN coverage, that was a story that a lot of people wanted to hear about and listen to, and it was very high on our download list. And then that kind of fell through the floor, and very few people talk about that device. There was so much hype about that for a long time. Its failure to kind of rise to the cream of the crop of the year of Braille is kind of telling. And then we have a couple of others here, like Nearby Explorer and more games, audio games coming to the forefront. So we had a lot of things out there with the various stories that didn't make it to our list, but we'd love to know what you guys thought was your favorite. If it wasn't one of the top 10, let us know again by writing us at feedback@blindbargains.com, sending us a tweet over at twitter.com/blindbargains, leaving us comments in the section below. In 2016's predictions, JJ was hoping for a Surface phone. He may have missed it by a year, because I think that's coming. It's one of the things Microsoft hasn't talked about, but it feels like, you know, the advancements in the Intel chipset, computers becoming, PCs especially, coming more handheld or small stick size, with a screen that we could use with a more advanced narrator that would have Braille displays, that feels more like more of a reality in 2017 than it ever did in 2015 when he made the prediction for 2016. What do we think is going to be some of the big things to look forward to in 2017? Any outlandish ones you want to make, or at least educated guesses?
I will commit to return in 2018 and let you know if Narrator is a screen reader that I think I could use full time by itself if I had to. I'm kind of curious as to where Microsoft goes with that in the next year.
Okay. I like that. Shelley, any thoughts?
I think transportation is going to be a big deal. We're obviously not going to all be driving our own self-driving cars at the end of 2017. And I think probably what I'll end up saying at the end of that year is that we still have a long way to go. But I feel like a lot of things are going to develop, whether it's technology in the literal sense, or whether it's frameworks around which autonomous and partially autonomous vehicles can exist, and also how that impacts companies like ride-sharing companies. And I feel like there's somewhat unpredictable stuff going to happen in that area, but that transportation will continue to be in flux in 2017, and lots of stuff is going to happen.
If you thought the accessibility conversation we had around set-top boxes was fun, kiddos. The mapping technology debate alone, and I'm not just talking about the old standbys like Google Maps versus Apple Maps. You know, if you look at things like even Foursquare, which Postmates is using in the background, they're licensing that because a lot of people don't want to keep paying Google for those API calls. There are people snapping up maps, and as not romantic as cartography might sound, even though Jamie did a really good job about the talking map, the grab on mapping companies is just as big as the ones as artificial intelligence. It just doesn't get as much press coverage, or at least mainstream press coverage, as you might think. Uber has been sinking tons of money. It was announced that they had lost like, what, $800 million in the last quarter or something like that. It's because they're spending hand over fist on R&D. Because for Uber, the two biggest drains on them is paying drivers and buying maps, you know, renting maps for other real reasons that they're using.
Well, they're also subsidizing service to a great degree. So let's not forget that.
If they can get away and have robots and kind of go the Amazon model where they can use fewer and fewer warm bodies to move warm bodies, and they can have better mapping technology that they can control and own themselves, that's a big step into not just moving ride sharing, but that's freight. You know, you're having a lot with trucks that could run on their own and move things from place to place because, you know, a lot of people drive 18 wheelers from place to place in this country. And that's a big part of the economy. If you can cut that down, that saves a lot of money. And they can just drive 24 hours as opposed to a driver who gets tired and has to pull the rig over on the side of the road. And you don't have to rely on air freight as much. So Uber is looking very much beyond and putting money into R&D to get around that kind of thing. With that said, though, points of interest are varying, and it varies from map company to map company. finding something in Texas, having lived in Texas, is a little easier unless you go to, like, you know, UT campus, where a lot of things are, as anybody who's used GPS knows, are not necessarily labeled or specific point of interest labeled. When I moved over here to the East Coast, there are a lot of colonial designs that are still here in the streets. You know, cities are about as far as a horse could travel in one day. And a lot of the metropolitan stuff is one big block. So in one big block, you would have your Sam's, your Best Buy, your Burger King, and about 35 other venues. And GPS just sees it as one big block. So when you come in with an Uber driver, they are immediately confused as to, do you know where the Best Buy is in all of this? Because I'm over by blank. So I've had to learn non-visually where a lot of these things are in order to help the Uber driver get me to where I want to go. And that even goes downtown. If I go to, like, say, the Time Warner building, the main building is set way back in the campus. So these are things that autonomous vehicles and mapping technology is going to have to work on way far in the future. So you see stories about the one here with the Google and the blind individual, and then you read about Tesla and the auto assist, where it, you know, steered somebody out into an accident. That's fantastic. Then you read stories about some of the issues that were happening in San Francisco with Uber and their cars, where it was running red lights or crowding out bicyclists in bike lanes. There's just a lot that has to be, you know, thought about before that becomes more of a reality. And of course, if Jeff Bishop was here, he would remind us all that insurance companies are going to be the big ones, because, you know, buying a self-driving car, the maintenance on a self-driving car for all the cameras and the LiDAR, if that's what it's using, is going to be very big. And here I was talking about, well, people clean a $500 Braille display. There's a lot to be considered before we, you know, look towards that kind of stuff. And it's one of those that I'm most adamant about, more than any other technology, that we all have some reality about and understanding that that's not around the corner, that I love Knight Rider as much as the next guy, as I have on an end of line episode that I've done. But it's going to be a while before I'll be able to raise an Apple Watch and call Kit to the front door. And on that diatribe, that's going to do it for the year 2016, 2017. I will make a prediction in that you will hear us all over the place. More than likely Shelley over at ATIA, all of us over at CSUN. And then, of course, we'll have the convention coverage that we're known so far and wide for, being in Sparks, Nevada this year for ACB, and of course, Orlando once again for the National Federation of the Blind. But that might not be it. We have other things that we're looking at and other places we'd like to go. And of course, JJ will be traveling around the country going to his various places for AT guys who are, like him's, a generous sponsor of this particular program. I want to thank everybody for being on the panel. Definitely you want to read Access World, because that's where Jamie and Shelley do a lot of their work. But you can also find Jamie. Where else can they find you?
You can find my work over on AppleVis for certain. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JamiePaulS. And I will occasionally retweet things and every once in a while have an original thought over there. So check that out.
Shelley, iOS Access Book for All, The Parallel, so many places. What else am I not getting that we should plug today for people to be able to follow along with all the stuff you do?
Well, let's get the URLs out there. So my book on iOS accessibility is called iOS Access for All, and you can find that at iosaccessbook.com. My podcast, which is ready to go for 2017, and I'm putting it on a bi-weekly schedule, so get ready, is parallelpodcast.com. I write at Access World, and you can also find me on Twitter at Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-Y, and I think that's plenty of Shelley for anyone, at least for the moment.
I would never say such a thing. It is always a joy to read and listen to you both. And it's great to work with all of you guys again. I'm sorry that Gigi couldn't be with us and he was feeling under the weather. But big thanks to Patrick Perdue and, of course, our sponsors and all of you listeners for hanging in there with us and listening to these ramblings of that, the 2016s. And we look forward to working with you in 2017. My name is Joe Steinkamp. You can find me over at Ranger Station on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Ranger Station, all one word. You'll hear a lot about these stories, stories that don't always make it to Blind Bargains. And then, of course, a lot about science fiction, Doctor Who, cord cutting, and Star Wars at the moment, because I'm actually reading a lot of the new canon, because I didn't really read a whole bunch of the old canon, so I'm way into Star Wars and Catalyst and Rogue One at the moment, because it's just so cool, and IMAX theater has awesome sound, like the type of sound that vibrates your clothes kind of sound. Oh, it's so good. So you can find out a lot about that, which also plays into my love of home theater. And of course, a couple of things about Google Home. So you can definitely follow me over there. Of course, you can also follow our friends over at AT Guys, who generally sponsor this program, over at atguys.com. Christmas may be over. The holidays may have passed. Those who didn't already have the gift receipt might be selling the equipment that they got for fun on Blind Bargains. You might be able to pick up some amazing deals on new and or gently used equipment. You want to send on over classified, you can do so. Just go on over to blindbargains.com or follow us on Twitter at blindbargains. JJ usually mans the desk on that particular account. And also you can catch up with a lot of the information over there. I want to also do a shout out to Chansey and Scott and some of the other people that have helped us, Liam, Jeff, and so many more that have been on, and all of our interviews that we had at our various places. A lot of people give up some of their time to make this old podcast keep running, and we do appreciate that. It would not be a podcast without them or you at home. So,
for and they were the part of the panel that ranked these stories with us, too, we should mention.
That's true, and that'll be listed over at the show notes, which are available at blindbargains.com, and then head on over to the audio tab. So for a happy 2017 to you all, we will get back to normal, quote unquote, format soon. And we'll cover over the news that happened from like mid-December on while we were all away on holiday vacation. But for now, we wish you the happiest of New Year's. Have a good week, everyone.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2017.